If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTradio.live. Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Don't forget, you can lodge your vote for the question on domestic violence and whether those who have been convicted of domestic violence or have been in breach of apprehended violence orders should be forced to wear a monitor if further accusations arise. You can do that on For My Say. So go to the app For My Say. You've just got to download the app very quickly, very easy to do. But vote now, because I'd really like your views on whether this is something that should be enforced. Because you have so many do-gooders in this world that say, oh, that's too hard to do. We don't want to do that. Well, hang on a minute. If you have an illegality on your name for this kind of stuff, you have a predilection to offend again, and you should be scrutinized as such. We're not saying do this to people who have had accusations against them. That's way too much. But for those who actually show a predilection for that kind of aggressive approach to women, I'm sorry. We've got to monitor exactly where you are so we can prevent someone from dying or being maimed. Pretty simple. It might be heavy-handed. You might think it's rubbish. It's a step too far. Well, vote. Vote on For My Say, the question that's there now. You've got until 4:30. You've got 25 minutes to do so. So do that right now if you can. Interesting. Based on today's big announcement, you would have expected the Greens to go into bat on behalf of Anthony Albanese for what he's done about domestic violence. Now, just so you know, if you haven't caught up with either our news or what we've been discussing in the first hour, he's dedicated $925 million over 4 years, and this money is going to women who might get up to $5,000 in their skyrocket if they're in trouble or if they think they're going to be the victim or are the victim of domestic violence and they want to leave home. This is a leaving home bonus. It's a handout. I don't know how practically you initiate this and make it happen, but it's something that's been announced today. I don't know who decides whether you get $5,000 or $50. How do you determine that? You've just got to believe what women say. And don't tell me this is not going to be abused. Whenever there's a big bucket of money from government, it will be abused. Don't worry about that. There'll be couples who work out a way of abusing it. Anyway, putting that aside, I noticed that the Greens Senator Larissa Waters, who you would have thought gone into bat for all of this with their mates in the Labor Party, Larissa Waters has slammed Anthony Albanese's response to domestic violence, saying it adds insult to injury. In a statement, Waters said the $925.2 million over 5 years investment failed to support frontline workers. The calls by tens of thousands rallying over the weekend and from frontline support services for many years asking for adequate funding to meet demand were ignored. The government announced $925 million over 5 years, but it's not for frontline services. You see, one of my complaints here has been, where are the refuges? You could use this money for refuges where women knew where they had to go and they were secure and safe, and they could get the counselling that's listed under the allocation of the $925 million. You could do that in that sphere, but just provide, and there are so many premises you could modify to make that occur in major capital cities, suburbs, and also in regional Australia. She says, it's to help women reach out to support services, but with those services already drastically underfunded, this announcement will simply increase demand on an already stretched sector. So you're going to have women who have a greater ability to leave their attacker, fine. They're supposedly safe, but where do they go? Where are the frontline workers to look after every single case? They won't be there because they're already underfunded. Where are the refuges for them to go? They'll spend the $5,000 pretty quickly if they want to get a hotel for 2 weeks. Where is the funding, she says, for the frontline support services to meet demand? To add insult to injury, the funding for leaving violence announced today won't even flow until July 1, 2025. So 14 months before a single dollar is assessed or given to a potential victim. 14 months. That's a bizarre way of making a major announcement to offset domestic violence, I would have thought. This is Chris Smith on TNT.
Delivering the facts.
The source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio. TNT.
Okay, so today the federal government committed nearly $1 billion for a program supporting victim survivors leaving violence. We can all agree, I think, on opposing domestic violence. But what danger do we face when the government comes in with language to protect us? I have no faith that they could deliver $50, $100, $1,000, $4,000 or $5,000 in an adequate time frame. And then when those cases all of a sudden become homeless, where do they go? Who looks after them, as the Greens have rightly pointed out? And how about online misogyny? How do you define that? On this program, we've spoken much about the eSafety Commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, and her outrageous demands for internet censorship. Will programs to combat online misogyny be in a similar category? Where does this end? Where does it start? My next guest is following these measures and others very closely. These are new innovations, of course. Dr. Reuben Kirkham is co-founder of the Free Speech Union of Australia. He was the EPSRC Doctoral Prize Fellow in Computing at Newcastle University, UK. He joins me live from Melbourne. Dr. Reuben Kirkham, welcome to TNT.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
What are your thoughts on the Prime Minister's latest proposals in combating, firstly, online misogyny and AI porn?
Where would I begin? I mean, it's like someone thinks the internet's a series of tubes. These ideas, there's many words being bandied around, algorithms, innovator, internet, e-safety, but these plans are not realistic. How do you decide what AI porn is? How do you determine between AI porn and art? There's no objective test that you could use to do that. And you'd also, these tools won't work. People, this will just go underground. You know, you can tell people all you want not to post things on the internet, right? You can make it easy for people to not find things they don't want to find. But if people want to find things, they will find them. That's completely unrealistic. It's a, basically a way, a prime minister on the doldrums. I think he's going to end up a bit like poor Hamza Youssef, creating some sort of distraction using e-wizardry rather than dealing with the hard issues.
Yeah, that's interesting. It reminds me of sort of someone with their finger in a dike and thinking that the whole wall is not going to fall in because of the extra water. At the end of the day, you've got to close down the internet to have any real influence. If people want to find what they're looking for, they will find it, won't they?
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. You have to close down the internet. You have to do what authoritarian countries try to do, the great firewalls and so on and so forth. And they also fail. Let's remember that. They also fail because it's very difficult to do. People want access to the internet. People want to be able to access the material they're interested in. That's been always the case. Since when at medieval times, people had ways of smuggling information they were interested in. 20 years ago, you know, as a kid, everyone had access to Grand Theft Auto, even if you're like 10 or 12 years old, right? Because people would find a way to sneak it on their PlayStation. This is nothing new. It's just using e-wizardry to try and pretend we can do something. The only people that believe they can do something are the activists hanging around, you know, in computing faculties. They've now got a bunch of activists who, many of them can't write a line of code, but they're there because they're sociologists or something, or they say so they are. They might think it's a good idea, but only people who know nothing about computers would believe this would work. The rest of us know this is just posturing. There are.
I've got a little bit more of a laissez-faire approach to this because I actually think, like last night, I showed my children, who are 8 and very, very tech savvy, I showed my children an image of a guy who was sleeping in, I think it was sleeping in Kenya or somewhere, and he woke up and there was a cheetah lying on his chest. I showed them this image and I put it on the television and they both said to me, "That's AI, Dad, don't worry." And they just looked away. I said, "No, look, have a look at this." And I instantly thought at that point that we're about to go into an era where everything we see, we're going to expect to be fake. So why are you worried about what's going to appear?
Oh, exactly. I mean, I think deepfakes are hard. They take a bit more work than that. But I mean, you know, think of all the efforts that people make in doing animations for Disney movies. But, you know, people spend less time on their screens. You know, if you want to go and see a kangaroo, go and see a kangaroo at a zoo or somewhere. If you want to see the Australian wildlife, go for a bushwalk. Like, that's, you know, people need to capture that, re-enjoying the real world rather than, you know, worrying about certain things. I mean, obviously, deep fakes for politicians and that sort of thing and people spreading lies and that nature, and that's a concern. But that, yeah, you're not going to help that by basically destroying trust. And these sort of misinformation bills, e-safety commissioners, take your pick, they just reduce trust in politicians. They reduce trust in people. They are authoritarian. I mean, you know, you don't fight authoritarianism with authoritarianism in that sort of way. But that's what they're proposing to do.
It's interesting, this business about misogyny. Because misogyny is so subjective, Ruben, I just get the feeling we're going to have another example of when the e-safety commissioner brings down her own personal feelings about what's acceptable and what's not. When is it misogyny and when is it okay?
Well, I mean, how would you define the test? It's like hate speech. I mean, it's the same thing dressed up in a new way.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a long history of hate speech laws. I mean, I guess the first serious attempt was by Joseph Stalin, who's very keen on trying to persuade the UN to have hate speech protections to stop Soviets getting upset, or to be more accurate, the Soviet people becoming upset if they find out things he's done. Before that, there was the slavers in the United States, you know, people who were enslaving black people. You know, so not on the side of the good, right? They were worried about group libelers against slavers. So this hate speech thing, you know, it's regressive, it's authoritarian, and it normally ends up targeting the people it's allegedly protecting.
Yeah.
You know, these hate speech, I mean, for example, people with disabilities, you know, they're people who are particularly vulnerable to this. What happens if you've got someone with an intellectual disability and they say the wrong thing? Or someone with dyslexia, as with Carl Borg-Neil, you know, blurts out the wrong word by accident and he got sacked at work. Yeah. And it's lots of people heavily affected. It's not a protection for the vulnerable. It will be an industry of people posturing about the misogyny they've got rid of. It's been perpetually offended. It won't help deal with real serious issues.
I'm so interested in what's happening in terms of this misinformation and disinformation bill, and I'll talk about that with you in just a second. But I want to play something for you from the Prime Minister. He's obsessed about censorship. Here's what he said yesterday.
That is a global problem that we are dealing with content that promotes violence of different forms, in some cases a misogynistic, violent approach towards women. But in other cases, as we've seen recently as well with the comments of the e-safety commissioner, we need to be very conscious about what is online and about the impact that it is having. Now, that is something that is a role for government, but it's also a role for public discourse, I think.
A role for government. Whenever there's a role for government, that sounds to me like as if we better listen to their narrative.
Absolutely. I mean, how is this going to work? He's going on about, he's just picking something that someone doesn't like has been suddenly inset. And people say all sorts of bad things on the set. People say all sorts of bad things when they talk down the pub. You know, is he going to go to the people at the pubs, picture an Albanese on the wall saying, don't say that, that's offending someone. I mean,
over the fence between neighbours, same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, I was talking to some women who are very afraid about a new law in Queensland, where the idea is they ban the symbols, all these symbols. The list can be changed at any time. So to actually work out what symbols are banned, you have to go look through the swastikas to check, say, if the word woman's offensive or something like that. So it's very weird. It's like a distraction from the things he's doing. I mean, you look at the misogyny there, right? The misogyny of trying to censor women, misogyny we've encountered with Graham Linehan's tour of Australia. We're talking about, you know, all these attempts to shut down women. We've had activists cancelling events after, you know, 5 weeks of getting a visa, just running around finding new venues, all this sort of stuff, because they're afraid of having a discussion on women's rights. And it's like, you know, the Albanese government should be sorting out these types of issues, genuine issues, rather than magical pontification about e-wizards and commissioners and safety bazaars. And, you know, you might as well just come up with a new children's cartoon character that's going to tell everyone to behave. It's like,
Don't laugh. I shouldn't laugh. I bet someone's dreaming that up now.
Yeah, I mean, It's tempting, isn't it? Maybe we could. I'm sure there'll be another racket of parody of the safety commissioner, but she's in many respects beyond parody.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to come back. I've got to go to a quick break. I want to come back and talk further about the e-safety commissioner and also about how you set up Free Speech Union of Australia. We'll talk further on this subject. Reuben Kirkham is my guest, and we'll come back with him after a quick break right here on TNT.
TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Now I want to say this, and I'm going to say it just once.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
How the hell did we get the e-safety commissioner we have, and how the hell did she get so much power, so many employees, and so much money in one unit?
Well, it's a fair question, isn't it? I mean, that she hasn't actually got so many powers. She sits there making up powers, and this is kind of the problem we have with her. She, you know, the Raider Hell might be paid with good intentions. They gave her $10 million. Go and protect children from being bullied at school, right? This isn't what happened. She has only issued, in about space of a year, 13 formal letters protecting children at school, which is basically, dear principal, you've got a bad student, please do your job, thanks to your safety commissioner. And there's another 3 notices taking down indecent images. So that takes about 16 notices they've issued for about $10 million. And yeah, sure, they say you do some informal things, but all it is basically, it's common sense, right? You know, if you're Facebook, your ex, you don't want porn on your channels. You don't want porn going next to an advert. You don't want cyber abuse next to an advert. So it's like, you know, they've got the strongest incentives to begin with to take this stuff down. And they do when they're approached, because what happens is people go to the safety mission and they say, oh, by the way, this is here. And yes, of course, they take it down. It's like, but why don't you just email the provider and say, look, it's here. You know, you can skip out the safety commissioner. So all it's doing is prolonging an agony. I don't know how they got the money, but, you know, it's probably someone well-meaning thought, oh, yes, just give $10 million to save the children or something, and they didn't think about it properly. I mean, that's how these things start, you know. And, of course, they keep rolling when people try and keep their office, have their ambitions, their empires. That's where we end up in this way.
Yeah, exactly. And all of a sudden, we've got this public servant, this quasi-public servant, and her American background being used to judge what Australians should see and shouldn't see. And I'm sorry, that is censorship of our free speech, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Act basically says, and she's ignoring the Act, I believe it's Section 233 off the top of my head, anything against the implied freedom of political communication, she has no power in respect of the Act. It's just disapplied. She's ignoring that. I don't think she's read that. It's like you're interacting with pub lawyers who're sitting there just making up as they go along. Wow. They don't give people the required notices. So Billboard Chris has still not received his notice. All the people who've had content taken down informally, they're claiming, oh, it's informal, it's not a real notice. I don't agree. I think they've got the same rights of appeal. So with the first appeal has been filed involving Billboard Chris because we spotted what was going on and reached out to him and said, look, you know, actually, you do have an appeal, right? You can appeal it. The e-safety commissioner's done something dodgy and not told you. And thankfully for Billboard Chris, he exited the good thing and forwarded on the latest term and said, this is what's happened. But X have no obligation to do that, right? You know, people with smaller accounts, that's it, it's a Facebook page, they'll probably just find their account's been deactivated.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably what happens. And Billboard Chris had about 400,000 Twitter followers and the premium status, that would be a bit harder to do in his case. But I assume that was why the request was made, to take down his account, not to, take down the posts. It would make more sense. Or maybe just Teddy Cook got angry and sent them email and sort it out. Maybe he had a bad day, but I don't know. But it would seem more likely the goal was to take down the account, and it's obviously backfired spectacularly.
Yeah. I want to ask you about the Free Speech Union of Australia. How did it start, and what are your campaigns at the moment? What are you focusing on?
So it began about a year ago. I guess before that, it sort of was written to Toby independently saying, look, we want a free speech union. We've heard that with Orwell or whatever it was bugging us. In my case, it was Monash University and the 1984-style TV screens that are bigger than my apartment, telling you what to say, what to think, how to vote in a referendum. You get the idea. I mean, fed up with Orwell, basically, being seen as a blueprint rather than a warning. So we've grown over 6 months, we've been running for 6 months. We all take cases as they arise. So if you're a member and you have a problem on free speech, unlike traditional unions who are trying to throw you in the bus in many cases, we will actually help you. We will try and defend you. We'll fight your case for you.
Right.
We also take on issues. We've got two cases running at the minute. There's Billboard Chris's case that I mentioned against the eSafety Commissioner. We've got Andrew Timming's case where he was targeted simply for making an innocuous tweet, actually on the top of today's topic of misogyny, pointing out that there was an asymmetry about how it's thought about socially. RMIT went after him after that point, and he was dismissed, and he's appealing it. And it's been that's been quite a surreal case for different reasons. As you may be aware of, the Progress Pride flags that started appearing at the bottom of Commissioner Connolly's emails. When we asked what was going on, we're like, hang on, what is this flag? Why have you got political flags at the bottom of what's supposed to be an independent commission? And the answer was, oh, it's my secretary doing it. And it's like, well, but why are you letting your secretary do it? Well, they call it secretary's associates, but yeah, that was what was going on. So yeah, those are the two cases we've got running.
Okay.
Please do join us. You know, we're a genuine union. We're tax deductible. We're to help people. And, you know, we welcome anyone who supports free speech and Australian values.
It's interesting. Billboard Chris, you've got an involvement with Billboard Chris. What is that? Is that in reference to transgender ideology?
It's to do with the way that his tweet was improperly taken down in Australia by the eSafety Commissioner.
Right.
It's a truly remarkable case. It's plainly protected communication under the implied freedom of political communication, which the eSafety Commissioner didn't address in their notice because they seemed not to have read their entire act. It didn't meet the test of serious psychological harm, right? This is a politician, in effect, Teddy Cook, being criticised. And apparently, who would reasonably believe that criticising a politician, indirectly, not even naming him or them, depending on your perspective on him or her, but the person in question, I can understand why a politician would not like to ever be criticised, but it's not what we do in Australia. It's not what we do in any Western society.
No.
So it's going to be an interesting case. And, you know, it's an administrative appeals tribunal, which is sitting on it for the last 2 weeks. So we've chased them up and we've had no further explanation as to why the case has not been issued. So, you know, there's the usual bureaucratic grind going off there, but it's a fascinating case. And it's
He's in Australia at the moment, Billboard Chris, isn't he?
Yes. Yeah. I saw him literally last night. He's having a great time here learning about the strange aspects of Melbourne students, as you've probably seen from his Twitter channel. It was just purely coincidentally he happened to be coming, and I'm sure he'll be back for the hearing. So that'd be a very interesting experience for him.
I should let our audience know what happened there about the university tete-a-tete. A controversial anti-transgender activist. Well, he's not anti-transgender. He's simply trying to say that women's rights are not to be ignored, and that those who call themselves trans women need to understand that they are biological men. He's not anti-transgender. Anyway, they've called him that in the website news.com.au, and they've said he's been involved in a heated clash on the University of Melbourne campus. Canadian man Chris Elston, who goes by the name Billboard Chris, for his signature sandwich board costume bearing messages, including children cannot consent to puberty blockers, was filming interviews with students on Tuesday morning when a passerby yelling, "Scumbags," allegedly knocked his tripod and camera to the ground. Mr. Elston says in the video, "Can we get police on this guy?" as he and a companion follow after the dog walker. "Some dysfunctional trans identified person just came and smashed my phone down." The person tells them, "Transphobes can suck my D. Have you got a problem?" Mr. Elston asks to have a conversation. "Why the violence?" The person says, "What violence?" Well, the violence was plain to see. This is the kind of, free speech that is not regarded as free speech because it doesn't agree with a particular political view, does it?
Well, I mean, these students would be offended if you put a sign up saying the world is round. Yes. I mean, let's be a bit honest about it.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a very big irony of an anti-child abuse campaigner being targeted in this way. I mean, he's someone who's day in, day out, given up his time to fight to protect children from the most horrific abuse and what's obviously now a medical scandal.
Yeah.
And that's seen as a bad thing by this establishment of people who presumably are, supporting this medical scandal because, I don't know, maybe they feel like it, or because they make, in the more cynical case, the mates of Big Pharma, who make a lot of money out of this scandal. These people who take these puberty blockers and go for these surgeries, they will suffer considerably in many cases, particularly if it's done wrongly. And they will be a lifelong medical patients. And there's some appalling examples.
And the Australian government is silent on all of this. The Australian government is absolutely silent. And Billboard Chris has actually posted today on X saying, "Australian children are being put on puberty blockers when they are only 8 or 9 years of age. Insistent on perpetrating this abuse, Australia's health ministers are trying to deny the relevance of the CAS review." And I've explained the CAS review in great detail on this program. "They're so afraid of trans activists that they would rather sterilise kids than be called names by child abusing liars." Well, I've got to say, he is right on the money, isn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, it's supine, unethical, and it's unworthy of any, political office. I mean, it used to be in the good, it used to be that politicians had honour. And people behaving in that way, people who are not, were willing to hide the truth to harm children for basically vanity and dogma, it's worrying. It's not acceptable in a democratic society. It's a sort of thing that authoritarians like to do, not Democrats.
Exactly. It is exactly that case. Dr. Reuben Kirkham, I want to thank you very much for not only being on the program, but doing what you're doing, because you're filling a gap in an area that I don't think Australians protect enough, which is freedom of speech. Congratulations and good luck with all your work.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Good to have you on the program, Dr. Reuben Kirkham. It's good to have him with us. He is the co-founder of the Free Speech Union of Australia, speaking to us there from Melbourne. I've got to get some news for you. Let's do that right away. Get to the newsroom on TNT.
Now.
I've got good news and bad news.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Police in riot gear have stormed Columbia University in New York after protesters there smashed their way into a campus building and barricaded themselves inside. US President Joe Biden is reportedly considering offering Palestinians who've escaped the war in Gaza a permanent home in the United States. And Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has vowed to push on with his invasion of Gaza's southernmost city of Rafah, regardless of whether Hamas accepts its latest deal.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Okay, we've closed our poll for My Say, and that is on the individuals being monitored by devices if they had convictions for domestic violence or breaching apprehended violence orders and were accused of further offences. So that's closed. Thank you so much for contributing to that poll. And I'll be really interested to see how you voted as to whether this was a good idea from the New South Wales opposition or not. And we'll have the results for you in about 10 to 15 minutes from now. I want to go to our talkback lines. Andrew, go right ahead.
G'day, Smithy. How are you?
How? Very well, thank you, mate. You?
Oh, mate, fired up. We're going to stop the murder of these Brumbies.
Yeah, give us an update. What's been going on?
Yeah, we've got a protest happening tomorrow morning, 6:30. We're meeting at the Cenotaph. There's been some beautiful poetry sent to me. We're going to read that out in honour of the horses that served us so well from the high country all around the world in war.
At the Cenotaph in Hyde Park, Sydney, 6:30.
No, sorry, Martin Place, the Cenotaph.
Martin Place Cenotaph at 6:30 tomorrow morning.
Yep, and then we're going to walk up to Old Parliament House between 7 and 9. We'll be there. I'm on my way to Office Works to get a petition printed out so that we can gather signatures. We're then going to have a break. I'll give my dogs a break for an hour and we'll be back from 10 to 12 because there's a whole heap of people coming from out of town that want to come and protest. Now, I heard this morning and read that the numbers of Brumbies are 597 in one particular area. The government's telling us there's over 5,000. So that's a tenfold mistake. And this number of...
Someone's telling porkies.
Absolutely. Well, this one of, I think there was $78,000 raised to do an aerial flyover. They used thermal imaging. They used the most high-tech manner to do it. It was supported by a businessman in the Snowies. And, mate, I've never had so much support in any of the protests or walks or anything that I've ever done in the last 10 years.
Wow.
As I have from the Brumby community. We're going to save two Brumbies. We're going to ride from the high country to Parliament House in Sydney. Then we're going to head from Sydney down to Canberra. I can't give you any exact dates yet because it'll depend on the training of the horses that we need to do. But that's my commitment to the Brumbies. We are going to take this not only to New South Wales Parliament House, but to Federal Parliament House. And as soon as we announce a day for National Brumby Day, we'll let you know.
Fantastic. Good to hear from you, mate. Thank you for updating us and reminding our viewers and our listeners that if they do have a spare moment tomorrow to be part of this protest, especially if they care about what's going on in terms of... And it is a slaughter, mate. You know, if you're running around with a helicopter and a gun, you better be some kind of super sniper because otherwise you're going to injure and maim horses that should have been treated a lot better.
Well, Smithy, there's mares that are aborting their foals after they've been shot.
Mm.
They're running these animals into the ground with the helicopters. Then they're shooting them. There was one animal they counted 16 bullet holes in. What do you mean about that? What do you mean about leaving a mother so injured it's crawling on its front legs to try and get to its foal? This is disgusting. If they want to get the Brumbies out, fantastic. I'll take two. There's a lady who's expecting 35 to be put on a truck, but they'll probably shoot them instead because they've stopped the rehoming. This is moronic, barbaric, and it's evil.
Yeah. I agree completely. Thank you so much, mate. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. Bye.
No problem. Good on you. Fantastic to get his call. That's on tomorrow. Okay, we've got some results for our For My Say poll. And some interesting results. Overwhelmingly supportive is what I can describe your vote as. Overwhelming support in support of the idea from the Liberal Party in New South Wales, the opposition, that we should be monitoring using devices on those accused of domestic violence only, of course, when they have had a previous conviction for domestic violence or have breached an AVO on a previous occasion. And it makes sense to me. Well, it's made sense to you. Those who say no, 5%. Those who say unsure, 5%. Get it right. Those who say unsure, 5%. Those who say no, just 3%. And those who say yes, 91%. 91% of those listening or watching TNT want devices attached to, you know, the arms or the ankles of accused domestic violence offenders who have had a previous conviction or a breach of an AVO. 91% supportive of that. Thank you so much for voting. Much appreciated. All right, let's talk further and let's talk about something completely different, like cyber and technology, because it is our Cyber Wednesday. Alex Zaharoff-Reut from techadvice.life is with us right now. Alex, g'day there.
Smithy, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm in Sydney. I'm in the hotel room, but I've got a rather you know, ordinary-looking background today.
You're in a hotel room. What do you go from hotel room to hotel room, do you?
If only that was the case.
Homeless. But,
normally I'm in Canberra, but there's a big conference on tomorrow, so they've put me up for the night so I can be here fresh and ready for 8 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Well, lots to talk about. The Australian newspaper had an exclusive today on what seems to be something a little bit shonky, I've got to say, but you tell me what you've read. Australian government does $1 billion deal to partner with US quantum computing company building world-first fault-tolerant quantum computer. And apparently the Labor Party had a lot to do with this.
Yes, well, according to that particular article, there's some former lobbyists for the Labor Party, or you know, they're lobbyists for the Labor Party. They have these people on their books, and they're representing. Now, I heard today on a news broadcast that these were Australians who had gone to California, but even so, it's a Californian quantum computing company. And I mean, the government is spending $1 billion. There are several quantum computing companies here in Australia that they could have joined forces with, and instead, you know, I mean, there's supposed to be 400 jobs in Australia, but are these going to be Australian jobs? Are they going to be American jobs? There's $470 billion of you know, loans and equity, but how much is a loan? How much is equity? What they're trying to do is build a fault-tolerant quantum computer. Now, this is a computer that can, in theory, break the encryption that would normally take a regular computer like the one we have on our desks, you know, hundreds of years to break. In theory, a quantum computer could do this in seconds. And so it's a big threat to being able to secure all of our technologies. Now, this fault-tolerant computer isn't due to be developed until 2029. But I've spoken to the University of New South Wales. They have an offshoot called DIRAQ, D-I-R-A-Q. And what they have is a quantum computer that is able to be built not using sort of strange materials and having it at super cold temperatures with giant sort of fridges to keep it cold, but able to build it on the same technologies that the regular chips that we have in our computers and phones can be built on. So TSMC, the company in Taiwan that makes the chips for Apple and lots of other companies, they're getting that company to make these quantum chips. And these chips, now they announced that they can run 20 times cooler than before. So this means in the future we'll have, you know, quantum computers on our desks. And I mean, the Ed Husic, who talks about wanting to, you know, build Australian technologies, they've done a deal with a US company, and according to the Australian, they seem to have done a deal without proper tendering processes. The opposition communications spokesman is saying that it's a very, very strange way of doing things. And so, I mean, it's great that Australia is working on this, but Canada is spending three times as much on quantum computing. So, you know, backroom deals, you've got to wonder what's going on with the Labor Party.
And tell me about the Canadian version. I bet they're using Canadian firms.
Well, look, I actually don't have all the details on that, but I would imagine so. I mean, certainly they're right close to the US as well and have a pretty close tie to them. But I mean, they're spending three times as much. Look, there's a $15 billion fund that they are taking money from. But this money could have gone to a number of Australian companies who are working in this space. And instead, we're putting all this money into a US company with no guarantees that the, you know, local people are going to be employed. And yes, they're talking about building it in Queensland, but that's probably a sop to Stephen Miles, who's about to be voted out on his own admission from the next, in the next Queensland election. So you've got to wonder what's going on here. And this was big news over this past week. And as you said, The Australian has a big article about it today, talking about the fact that, Labor Party people are involved and the tender processes seem to have gone out the window.
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't surprise me. I hope Peter Dutton's onto this so we can actually get to the bottom of it, because there would be a lot of Australian firms who are in this space who would be dirty right now and wanting to get to the bottom of why they weren't involved. Now, those iPads we expected late last year, and then, of course, back in March, Apple finally announced the May the 7th in the US date and also May 8th for us. Is that right?
Yeah, it's going to be May the 8th for us at midnight. So we'll actually have more details about this next week. We'll have all but what's supposed to happen is they're supposed to have an OLED screen. So the best OLED screens in the business. They're meant to be thinner devices than we've seen before. And the big twist is that they should have the M4 chip. Now, that chip wasn't supposed to come till the end of the year. And this is supposed to be the chip from Apple that can do generative AI on device. Now, they've been talking to Google, they've been talking to OpenAI about getting some of their powers to do this generative AI, but Apple is all about privacy and security, and as much as they can do on device will be something that most of the other players cannot do. They're sending stuff to the cloud. So that if that comes true, and we'll know, we'll talk about it next week, that will be a big development, because Microsoft and others are launching a computer with Qualcomm, big competitor to Apple. They make the chips that's in most of the Samsungs, and they've got a chip that they say is faster than the M3. So for Apple to launch the M4 chip, which will come to the computers later this year, but in the iPads first, will be big news. And there's also supposed to be a pencil, an Apple pencil that you can now squeeze and get haptic feedback on. You can feel it vibrating when you do certain tasks. But you know, we'll have all the details next week.
That is interesting, because Apple was slow out of the gate when it came to AI, and it looks like as if they're going to catch up big time.
Well, they've been spending millions of dollars a day. I mean, $1 billion. They've got a secret AI division in Switzerland. They've been getting people from Google. They've been poaching people. They've been working very hard. This Worldwide Developer Conference is 6 weeks away, but the iPad announcement is next week. So, yes, they have been very distracted by the car, which they've ditched. They're not doing the car anymore. They've been caught flat-footed. Everyone else is working on AI. I mean, Apple should have had – if Steve Jobs was still alive, Siri would have been much smarter, you know, half a decade ago. But unfortunately, that's not the case. We're having to wait. And, we just have to wait and see what they launch next week. But it looks as though the rumors are suggesting that they are going to have AI on chip. So let's see if that's the case.
Okay, we've got to take a break. I'll be back. Plenty more to talk about with Alex Zaharoff-Reut from techadvice.life. We'll do that right after a break on TNT.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
We all know what it's like to feel alone. But it just takes one new connection.
Want to get out of here?
To empower many.
This is unbelievable.
It doesn't take a superhero to bring forces together. We all have the power to reach out.
Let's go!
And help someone feel like they belong.
Pretty cool, huh?
We are stronger together.
This is The Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
We're talking tech. We're talking cyber. If you want to pick Alex's brain, so to speak, you can do so by calling right now. It doesn't matter where you are in the world. He knows what you've got in terms of devices and any of the problems you might have, he can try and fix them for you. From the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. You can dial in, gets free advice from Alex from the UK, 033-0024-1026, or from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Now, TPG and Optus have come up with a sharing deal for regional mobile networks.
Yes, in Australia, the big telco is Telstra, and they have the best network in the cities and in the regions. And people who are on Vodafone and Optus normally go with those providers because they have a cheaper price. You know, they give you more gigabytes per month for the money. Now, in the regions, there's often been a problem. And Telstra wanted to do a deal with Vodafone last year, but the ACCC, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, knocked that deal on the head because they were worried that it was going to be anti-competitive. Optus threw up a big stink. Now, TPG and Optus already, TPG owns Vodafone, they already share infrastructure so they could put the same towers. But now they want to actually share their networks. Now, the networks will still be separate. There'll still be, you know, different companies, but TPG will gain access to 2,444 Optus mobile network sites in regional Australia. And this will increase its current national 4G coverage to around about 98.4% of the population. And so, you know, this goes from 400,000 square kilometers to 1 million square kilometers. So that's, you know, pretty big. And this will also see the fast tracking of 5G. And so there'll be, you know, 1,500 sites by 2028, and this will be to the 2,444 by the end of 2030. So this is great news for people in regional area who are having to pay higher prices to Telstra, who are not getting as good regional coverage with Optus and with Vodafone. And it also, you know, portends that they're going to have sharing of this spectrum in the cities as well to be a stronger competitor to Telstra. And it will be more competition, better prices and faster speeds, which is a good thing for mobile communications for all of us.
Especially for those in the bush at the moment who really do get the crook deal when it comes to coverage, but also in terms of price. Now, scam losses. Gee, we talk about this and we talk in the billions when it comes to scam losses. As many people who are listening or watching know firsthand, it is so easy to lose your money with scams. But there's been a bit of a decline, has there?
Yeah, 13.1% decline in reported losses to $2.74 billion. Now, it's still a lot of money,
yeah.
So billions upon billions of dollars. Whoa. And, you know, this is to do with romance scams. Investment scams is number one. Romance, so it's $1.3 billion. Remote access scams, where someone rings you to say they're from Microsoft or the NBN or some company and they want access to your computer to clear out a virus, that's number two at $256 million. And romance scams are still pretty big, $201 million. And it's so easy for people to be caught by people they can't see. Maybe they're getting AI-generated video or AI-generated voices, and you know, they're falling in love with somebody they've never met, and next thing you know, they've sent over, you know, tens, hundreds of thousands of dollars because their paramour is couldn't come to Australia, had an accident, but in, you know, caught by the police. I mean, the excuses are incredible, and because you're so invested, you want to get into it and help that person. But look, it's good to see that the coordinated scam prevention, detection, and disruption initiatives have made a difference, as has the ads. There's ads on TV, the ACCC with the ScamWatch website. They've done a lot of work in this regard to warn people. And but, you know, $2.7 billion is still far too much.
Oh, massive amount of money still, isn't there? Maybe we've just come a little bit, we've become a little bit more aware. Okay, now tell me about AI and what we consume with news. There's a little bit of a survey out today on that, is there?
Yes, now this is from the Department of Regional Development and Communications and the Arts, and they have put out this report which says that 95% of Aussies want news sites to disclose when they've used AI, and that if news sites are going to use generative AI to write the stories in full, that's going to negatively impact their view of those news sites. And of course, that's good news for us here in the real news business, because
yeah,
we're all
yeah.
about the real news. So this is called the 2023 Television and Media Survey. And you can, as I said, go to that Department of Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development. You can read it for yourself. And this is looking at also the ways in which Australians are using and understanding generative AI technologies. So we also see there's also the issue of children aged between 8 and 17 seeing content that is age inappropriate. Most commonly, this is through streaming subscription services. And 42% of children have age 0 to 7 have watched inappropriate content for their age group on free video streaming services. So really, it's a parenting issue. But sports is popular, with 51% of people having watched sports content. And 43% of Australians said they were likely to decrease the amount of sports content they were watched if gambling advertising was shown. But online streaming is definitely dominating content viewing. People who are watching TNT right now are doing it via an online streaming audio or video service. So that is blossoming. But yeah, people are still wary about generative AI.
So the likelihood is, you tell me, that in newsrooms like, you know, Channel 9 Newsroom, Sky Newsroom, that in the near future, but maybe they're doing it now, where they'll put through the key components of a story and get an AI composition of the story to be made up?
Well, that's certainly possible. Already for the past 2 or 3 years, people like the AP news people have been able to use AI to generate sports scores and to look at the earnings reports from companies. So those things are pretty solid and easy to sort of massage into a story. But when they start having news reporters that are artificially generated, reading from artificially generated scripts, I mean, we need to have humans in there. And when there's a big mistake, like a website called CNET in America, a big technology news organization, was using AI without disclosing it. And people eventually noticed, hang on, these stories are giving the wrong information. I mean, whoever was editing it and putting their eyes over it wasn't doing a really good job. They just assumed it was good. Now, look, eventually AI is going to be so good as to be, you know, potentially imperceptible, but humans can never be completely out of the mix because you never know when the computer's going to have a glitch. Glitches happen all the time with technology. It's famous.
Now tell me about ChatGPT finally getting a memory. What do you mean by that?
Well, this is, look, if you've got ChatGPT, whether the free version or the paid version, if you look on the left-hand side, it remembers the questions you asked before. But yeah. If you want it to remember a fact about you or something from a previous conversation, it doesn't remember that. So ChatGPT has now introduced this particular feature and they've rolled it out to a select number of free and paid users, but eventually it'll become something for everybody. So if you tell it that you know, you've got some sort of food allergy or you're a vegetarian or something and you're asking it to create meal ideas for you based on the things that you have in your fridge because you've taken a photograph and you've shown it what's in the fridge, then it will remember that, hey, you're a vegetarian, so I better not, you know, offer you any meals that have meat inside of them, for example. But this is basically where the AI is starting to remember things from conversation to conversation, and it will be able to remember things about you and be just a lot more intelligent in the ways that it gives you responses. So this is something people may have thought already had. It hasn't. Most people won't have it yet, but it'll be something that'll be in all the ChatGPT programs most likely by, you know, within the next 2 or 3 months.
My eldest son said to me at a dinner we had recently, it was on the weekend, he said, "Dad, how is AI to be believed, whatever it produces," he says, how do you believe it when it's taking its information from the internet where a lot of things are not believable?
Well, look, this is where AI can be asked to give you sources. But even when it does, it can make those sources up. You know, it can point to previous case law or previous information, but you've got to go and check it. So just like with, you know, the warnings about Wikipedia being biased and, you know, don't use Wikipedia.
Wikipedia is a shocker.
But the one good thing about Wikipedia, though, is that it does list at the bottom of the stories where it got the information from. So it's good to go there to see which articles it got it from. And then you can double check those sources to see if an editor has massaged that information. But the only way to check something is to do your homework. In the old-fashioned way, we had to open up encyclopedias and books and we had to reference things. I mean, there's that famous saying that says, if you steal from one person, it's plagiarism. If you steal from lots of people, it's research. So the old adage about research has not gone away. You got to double-check, triple-check everything. Your work will ask you, the judge will ask you, your school teacher will ask you, and you have to be able to show your, you know, show how you figured out the math problem, not just give the answer.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, when I'm searching for something, I do it manually and I don't use my voice, but I'm starting to change because I'm watching one of my eight-year-old twins. I ask him a question, he goes straight to his iPad and goes, Siri, can you tell me what so-and-so is? And up it comes. And I'm getting jealous because he's finding information faster than I can type it.
Yeah. Look, my cousin in Hong Kong, he speaks English and he speaks Mandarin, he speaks Cantonese. But to type things in Cantonese on your phone is quite fiddly. So he's forever whispering into his phone, telling it to do things, getting it to transcribe what he says. And look, I show people in taxis, you know, who are usually from a different country, that do you know that the Google Translate, which is a form of AI, is very accurate. And you know, I'd say something to them and I go into quite a little story about your mother's come to Australia and she's got high blood pressure and she's got to take these medications. And the people, you know, when it's converting it into their language, Hindi or Italian, whatever the language is, they're like amazed at how accurate it is. And when I hold the phone in front of, you know, their dashboard, it's got some radio stuff, some buttons for auto or this, and it's converted into their language. Most people, you know, have no idea that it is so good. And we will have those glasses. Already you can buy the glasses. Somebody made them for their grandfather who was hard of hearing, and it was based on Alexa, and it was giving live subtitles. Now, you can get your phone to give you live subtitles, but you know those various headsets you can buy now can be programmed to do that. And by the end of the decade, we will have glasses that resemble the ones that you're wearing right now. And in your field of vision, you will see live subtitles of what somebody's saying. So the TV show doesn't have to have subtitles. It can automatically translate that as it's being spoken into a different language, and you'll hear it in your iPods, which may be part of the handles of your glasses, and it could be bone conduction. So it's not even sound that's coming out; it's being beamed straight into your eardrum. Those bone conduction headsets exist. We're on the cusp of a major change in tech, where you just interact with your technology like you're speaking, like your son is doing, by asking Siri these questions, and it gives him the answers quicker than you can remember it. So this is the world we're about to head into. As long as we don't blow ourselves up in a nuclear, financial, which is very dangerous, environmental or medical disaster, the future looks really good.
We're at the beginning of a major spike, though, is what you're saying, and I think you're exactly right. The beginning of a major spike. Good to be in your sector, you see. Thank you so much, Alex. Much appreciated. You enjoy your week. I will be watching or listening on Saturday night, Australian Eastern Standard Time. Thank you, mate.
Thank you. See you next week. Bye-bye.
All right. Alex Zaharoff-Reut, you can go to his website, techadvice.live, to get all of what we've spoken about, plus a whole heap more, and more on what we've also spoken about as well. So all on the website, and you can watch him on Saturday night, Australian time, right here on TNT. I'll leave you in the capable hands of Lembik Opik, who is filling in for Sonia today. He'll be coming to you from the UK. I'll leave you and hopefully see you back here tomorrow, same time, right here on TNT.